ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. The story so far is that Lord Vishnu appeared from one of the nostrils of Lord Brahma, who has four heads and who sits on top of the universe on a lotus flower. Though coming out in a very small form, he gradually expanded himself to become very big. And now he's roaring very loudly, just like a mountain roars. So our dear enemies, the mundane scholars, they will not believe this. We're very glad they won't believe this. Not glad for them, but we're glad that they won't understand this. They don't have entrance into this. Yeah, our dear enemies, the mundane scholars, won't believe this, for which we are glad. Not glad that they won't understand it, but glad that they have no entrance into this subject matter. Now, it doesn't seem very rational or logical or realistic that this could be actually true. If we say that God, the Supreme Person, appears in the form of a pig, that in itself they won't like to believe. And when we say he comes from someone's nose, they won't believe that. And they'll say, I won't think God is like that. Very good. God is appearing as he likes, not in the way that our friends, the mundane scholars, like. Or even there may be so many religionists with an incomplete conception of God who won't accept this. Even to accept the form of God. Even in the Bible it said that man is created in the image of God. But many people can't even accommodate that within their minds, how God can be a person with a form. Even if we present, here is the form, Krishna, beautiful, smiling, two hands, holding a flute, dressed in yellow clothes, they won't like to accept that. So they'll say that God is some light or power, God is all goodness. Not God is a person, two hands, two legs, feelings, likes, dislikes. So what to speak of God appearing as a pig? In this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead defies those who are not faithful, because the beginning of understanding God is acceptance of his inconceivable nature and potencies. If someone says, I believe in God, but I don't believe he could appear like that, or I believe in God, but how can you say God comes as a half man, half lion? Doesn't seem to me that God would be like that. All right. But God is not under your rules. You're under his rules. So you may not like, or within your tiny intelligence, to accept that God should be appearing as a pig or half man, half lion, or as a fish, or as a swan, or as a cowherd boy. Even as a cowherd boy, they're very difficult. God should be majestic and mighty, sitting on top of a cloud, punishing people. This is the concept. But no, he has his own way of doing things. He is independent. Swarat, the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is established that the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, is not obliged to anyone. He's not under anyone's rules and regulations. And even though he creates the rules and regulations of this material world, he's not bound by them. Just like by the rules and regulations of this material world, if we are living on this planet, we can't just take a trip out into space and go beyond the coverings of the universe. Now they say they're going to Mars. We don't believe them. We didn't believe them when they said they went to the moon, and now they're saying they're going to Mars. But even we read about Krishna, he went beyond the coverings of the universe in his chariot. and went to see Mahavishnu. So that doesn't seem to fit with our experience. It doesn't fit with our experience. If we're going to make a show of going into space, we have to have a big rocket, like a fireworks. They're talking about advanced technology, but you know this fireworks? They light the rocket and it goes pshhh. So exactly the same thing, the so-called space rockets. It's just the same thing. It's just a lot of fire comes out and what's this advanced technology? It's just the same as children playing. Exactly the same mentality also. Children playing. But when Krishna, we read about Krishna, when he goes into space, he goes on a chariot with Arjuna and takes him to see Mahavishnu. And who is that Mahavishnu? Yasyaika nishvasita kala matavalambya jivanti loma vilaja jagadandanatha Vishnur mahan seha yasya kala vishesho govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Mahavishnu is a portion of a portion of a portion of Krishna, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mahavishnu is lying down, asleep, yoga nidra, not in the mode of ignorance, as we sleep, but fully conscious. And when he breathes out, all the universes come from his body. And from the hairs. There's a hole where your hair comes out. You can't see it. It's so small. But perspiration comes out, so there must be some hole. But when Mahavishnu breathes out from these holes, universes come. And when he breathes in, universes go in. Now our logician is shaking his head. We don't believe these things. God, you don't believe. That means you're disqualified from understanding the subject matter. You can understand God. It's possible to understand why he appears as a pig. Why does he appear as a pig? Well, why does he do anything? Because he wants to. Everything he does simply for his own pleasure. He doesn't have to. He appears for certain purposes in this world. We have guna avatars, lila avatars. They all have some specific function. But the main reason he appears is simply for his own pleasure. He likes to do it. Again, the people will ask, why does Krishna play a flute? He likes to. He's God. He can do what he likes. You don't have to tell him. You can't tell him, I don't think God should play a flute. Well, you're not God. You're under God. You have to do what he says. Not that he will have to do what you say. Not that Krishna will be playing with Radharani and all of a sudden he says, I just got a phone call from Oxford University and they told me that they don't think that I should be playing with the gopis because it's immoral. Okay, close everything down. Go back home and I'll be a good boy from now on. And he's not under your rules and regulations. He does as he likes. And everything he does is good. There you cannot understand. Amoghalila. One name of Krishna is Amoghalila. Means there's nothing wrong in anything he does. From your point of view, because you don't know anything about reality, you may think that this is very wrong, Krishna dancing with the gopis. But this is very right. This is the most moral activity in all of creation. That Krishna is dancing with the gopis because it is a demonstration of the highest standard of devotional service, which is beyond ordinary morality. These are the gopis breaking the mundane morality of being the wives of their husbands and coming to the highest standard of morality of completely surrendering everything to Krishna. But the materialists won't understand anything about these things because they don't accept the first point of understanding God. They want to understand God, but they don't accept what is the very definition of God. Definition of God. Swarat. He's all-powerful and independent. Therefore, if we think we can measure him by our little stick, we have a 1 meter measure, and we want to measure the Atlantic Ocean. Is it possible? The doctor, same Dr. Frog, he's trying to, by his limited experience, examine and define what is the nature of the Atlantic Ocean. He has experience of 1 well, 10 meters deep, 3 meters wide. And he wants to, his whole understanding of bodies of water is limited to 1 well. So when he's told about the ocean, he doesn't believe it, because he thinks that all of reality must be with what he can understand. This is his puffed up mentality. He thinks that if I don't understand it, then how can anyone else understand it, because I'm the most intelligent. If I haven't seen an ocean, then how can there be an ocean, because I'm the most intelligent person. He is the most intelligent person within his experience. Among all the frogs in the world, Dr. Frog is a highly learned scholar, a very learned and intelligent person. He's very expert in the advanced levels of scientific inquiry and how to catch flies and eat them and other such important subjects. So he's considered the wisest of all frogs. But he's a frog, and his knowledge is limited to the well. So what is beyond the well, he can't even begin to talk about it, because he doesn't have any experience. That is exactly the point. Because he doesn't have experience, he cannot understand it. Achintya kalu ye bhava na tangs tarkena yogi at prakriti viparanta cha. Achintasya tad lakshanam. The Mahabharata has stated that the very nature of things, it's just a straightforward statement. That which is achintya, that which is not understandable by the mind, should not be an object of argument. It's nothing, you don't have any grounds to even discuss it, or argue about it, or try to speculate about it, because it's already defined as achintya, that which is inconceivable. So why try to comment on it at all? Actually, some people, even mundane scholars, who are more intelligent, they understand this. There are few in this world. I have one book. It's interviews with scientists, and they were asked different questions. And one of the questions they were all asked is about the relationship between science and religion. And several of them wrote in their reply that they're separate fields. Science deals with that which we can study, and religion deals with that which is beyond our ken, beyond our scope of knowledge, beyond our scope of analytical study. So that was pretty intelligent for a mundane scientist. They understood that there are, and actually it is a logical point to understand, that there may be many, maybe and almost certainly are many, many fields of knowledge that we have no access to. This whole modern science, supposed to be rational, is based on the premise that we can only accept that which we can perceive with our senses. But then why do you presume that all of reality is perceivable by your senses? Is it not more logical to presume that there are many levels of reality, there may be at least, if not are, many, many levels of reality which are beyond our sensual perception? How much can we know, living on this tiny planet, in this tiny universe, and we only live for a few years, and we have limited intelligence, and we can't control our senses even. Even though we have a big, big brain, PhD, but we can't control our senses. Big PhDs, they're lecherers and drunkards and so many cases. So how much do we actually know? Even in science, it is accepted, both in relativity theory and quantum theory, not that I know much about them, but this much I have heard from those who do know, that relativity theory accepts that there may be many levels of reality beyond those which we can perceive. We, at the present time, or with our present senses, we perceive within basically four dimensions. That is, length, breadth, height, those three combined make space, and time, within space and time. But there may be many, many other dimensions of reality that we are not aware of. Quantum theory, also some interpretations of quantum theory, give the idea of parallel universes, that according to their theory, not that we have to accept it, but according to their theory, there may be many universes existing parallel with this one. That means within this space, but in a completely different kind of matter, there are different universes going on that we have no access to, we're completely unaware of them. So if we're actually to be rational, the first thing, if we're going to be rational and logical and scientific, should be to understand that we can't understand everything by our limited brain power. Therefore, to understand that which is beyond our power of immediately understanding, we have to take knowledge from those who know. It's a very simple solution to all the problems of knowledge. They have problems of knowledge in scholastic fields, in all areas. It's not even in science. People think scientists know so many things, they know everything. But actually, among scientists themselves, they know that they don't tell everybody because then they wouldn't be so popular. But they know that there are many, many things which they don't know. There are many what they call problems in science. They have more problems than they realize. But they accept that there are problems in science. That means there are big gaps in their knowledge, which they just presume. Many times they presume something to be true so that they can make some propaganda that they know something, that they know what things are going on. But actually they don't. Just like there's this big gap in science called the missing link in evolutionary theory, which means when Darwin made his evolutionary theory, they presumed we'll go and dig up a few bones here and there. And like dogs, they dig up bones also. And we'll study these bones, and then we'll be able to prove evolutionary theory. And the problem with this is that they never did. In fact, they dug up a whole bunch of bones which go against their theory, and they dug them up and they buried them again, like dogs. And the findings were buried in university libraries, deep, deep, deep inside. Of course, Sadaputta Prabhu has done a pretty good job of digging them up and digging out these records from the vaults and presenting them to the world. But in all areas of science, just like so many different theories of the origin of the universe that scientists have. The very good theory that God created the universe, they don't consider that very scientific. Actually, it is a very scientific theory. Because what is science? They make a hypothesis. And then they see, they examine whatever they can examine. And then to try and explain it all, they make a hypothesis. And then they go back again to the data and examine it again. They go back and examine the data again and see if before they had a rough idea and they made a hypothesis, and they see if the examined evidence fits the theory, and they may have to adjust the theory a little bit that way, this way, and then they come up with what they call a scientific law, which by the scientific law, it means that everything that they observe should be explainable by that law. So, according to this system, if we see the whole universe, we see millions of stars at night and everything is moving with tremendous synergy. I'm not getting the right word. Harmony? Yeah, that's a good word. So, how is it all going on? By chance is one. It's not really an explanation. It's more like saying I don't know, but you don't want to say I don't know. Just like if I ask who put this here, this microphone stand, and you say you don't want to say I don't know, and so you say, well, it got there by chance, just by chance. That's all. Just happened to be there. How did this building come into existence? Who designed it? Who built it? Who put the money up to build it? Well, I don't know. By chance. It all happened by chance. One day there was a big storm and everything blew together. And, some light bulbs. By chance, the glass of the light bulbs came into formation. Some quartz from the sea, by chance, all came together. And there was some... By chance, there was a big fire burning and it all got smelted together and it came out as glass. And just by chance, the light bulb or the glass came in the shape. And just by chance, also, some iron ore, which was in the underground, that came out of the ground and got separated from the stone in which it was. And it just got shaped in exactly that shape. And it fell inside that glass, which also came into being by chance and just came in that shape. And then the cap came on it, and just by already, oh, it doesn't make any sense, does it? That's only the light bulb. What to speak of the whole house? If we say it all came into being by chance, who will believe it? Then what to speak of the whole universe? And this house, you can design it and build it. You have enough intelligence to do that. Taking the iron ore from the ground, purifying it, putting it in a particular shape. You have enough intelligence to do that. You can design a house. Very good. But what about the whole universe? It's so complex. Even one cell within our body, the most simple cell, is more complex than even a big modern city, what to speak of one house. And then how all the cells interact with each other. Then how all the different bodies interact with each other, how the different planets and the planetary influences all work together. So if we say by chance, it doesn't seem to be a very good theory. Actually, it's absurd. It's nonsense. It doesn't make any sense. Just like if we say the light bulb came into existence by chance, who will believe it? They have this theory, well, if you give it enough time and enough possibilities, it could come into being by chance. And they give the example. If you had enough monkeys, if you brought all the monkeys in the world and all the typewriters in the world and let them sit in the room with the typewriters and run around here and there, and you had paper in the typewriters, of course someone, not by chance, would have to keep on changing the paper. But eventually, in course of time, they would type out all the works of Shakespeare. That is their theory. Of course, even then there are some preconditions that you'd have to put the monkeys in the room with the typewriters. And who made the typewriters? Are you lost? You know, we're talking nonsense here, so it may be difficult to translate. If it doesn't make any sense, don't worry. But even then, can you believe that in course of time, by just jumping around on typewriters, all the works of Shakespeare would come out exactly with all the commas, all the spelling exactly correct, with all the commas in the right place, the full stop, the punctuation in the right place, the paragraph break, everything in the right place. Just like if you left enough monkeys for a long enough time, don't worry, it's all nonsense. You can tell them. You can't hear? I'm not speaking loudly enough? Okay. Just like if we left enough monkeys to play around in a place where there was iron ore, and we left them for millions of years, do you think they would make even they would extract the iron from the iron ore and fiddle around with it enough to make one filament exactly correct for a light bulb? What to speak of putting it inside the glass, which also has to come about by their chance fiddlings around? It's nonsense. It doesn't make any sense. But they're teaching these things. So we have a different theory, a different okay, take it as a hypothesis that there is a supremely intelligent and powerful being who designed everything, put everything in place, and holds it together. Because even if we say everything has come into being by chance, then how is it still going on by chance? We see that in nature there is a regenerative principle that for instance, when we cut ourselves, then the body, I don't say, but within the body, there is some mechanism for the blood to clot and for it to heal. And throughout nature we see that. If you chop the forest down, it will come back again. Nature regenerates. So how is this all going on? If you take it as a hypothesis that there is a supremely intelligent controller behind this all, everything fits the hypothesis very nicely. All the evidence fits it very nicely. There's only one problem with this theory that Dr. Frog didn't see that highly intelligent controller. Therefore, he doesn't believe it. All the evidence is there. Just like in a crime, sometimes someone is convicted. No one saw him. stab that person to death. But by circumstantial evidence, you knew, it was understood that these two people were enemies, they hated each other, they were always arguing. That man was seen picking up a knife and walking towards his house. He was seen walking out 5 minutes later. When they went inside the house, they found his enemy dead with the same kind of knife that he walked into the house with. Of course, it could have been a different knife, but it looked exactly, it's exactly the same kind of knife. He was covered in blood. There were his fingerprints on the knife. So no one saw him commit the murder. But by circumstantial evidence, it has to be concluded that this man is the culprit. So that is accepted, even in a court of law. So if we can't see God, does that mean there's no God? Can you not accept circumstantial evidence? People say, show me God. Let me see God. You can see by this method, by circumstantial evidence. Actually, you can see God. We are meant to see God. But we have to become purified to see God. Otherwise, even if you see Him, you cannot recognize Him. Just like people ask us, show us God. We will say, yes, here is God. And they will say, this is not God, this is a statue. Because they do not know what is the nature of God. That God, if He wants, He can take the form of the deity. And He does want. Therefore, He comes in the form of the deity. Those who are devotees, when they see the deity, they don't see a statue. They see Krishna. Those who are non-devotees, they may not even see the deities. They'll come and they'll see and they'll say, oh, very nicely decorated, lots of flowers, very nice. And they don't even see the deity. Because they're so much unfaithful. They don't have eyes to see. I've had this experience of showing someone and they say, oh, everything very nice, but they couldn't see the deity at all. So you can see God. You have to become qualified to understand, to see God. And the qualification is that one has to be His devotee, because He's such a great person. If we accept, hypothetically, there is a supreme controller, designer, then do you think you can just say, show Him to me? Just like if you want to see the prime minister of this country. I don't believe in that guy whose name I forget, something like Mataji, something like Mataji. So I don't believe in this. I don't believe He exists. Well, there's so much evidence. So many people have seen Him. Ah, I don't believe them. You can see His photograph. It's all a fabrication. Show Him to me. Do you think He's going to, oh, someone in Rijeka doesn't believe in me. Quickly, drop all the business. Get in a car, drive there and fall at His feet and say, here I am, the Prime Minister. Please, please believe in me. He's not going to run to you. He's coming to you out of His kindness and presenting Himself. Here I am Krishna. You don't believe I'm God? All right, universal form. Shishupal, you don't believe I'm God? Okay, off with your head. He's showing He's God. That is accept. Not only personally coming, but it's in so many ways, it's obvious that Krishna is God. This Yamuna Acharya has commented. Tvam Shila Rupa Charitai Parama Prakrishtai Sadvena Satvatiya Prabhalaischa Shastrai Prakyata Daiva Paramata Vidaischa Chayamcha Naivasara Prabhatavo Pradayanti Kaman. This means that it's obvious, he says, Yamunacharya says, that it's obvious that Krishna is God. It's by His activities, it's accepted by all the acharyas who are experts in the mode of goodness. They proclaim Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His character, everything He does, is completely clear that He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But those who are demons, they cannot understand it. Because they are demons. That is their disqualification. Nahang prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrita muro yang nabijanati loko mama jamaviyam. Krishna doesn't reveal Himself to the demons. There's a qualification to see God and to understand God. Not that You can just demand, show me God. It's a qualification. You can see, but you have to be trained how to see. Just like if you want to understand any subject matter, science, you have to be trained how to understand it. If you'll see, there may be some scientific experiment. So a layman, if he sees it, he won't understand it. To him, it's just some chemicals and some tubes and some glass pots. He doesn't understand what's going on. He sees, but he doesn't see. He doesn't see what's going on. But a trained scientist sees, oh yes, now they are reacting some chemicals to make some other chemicals. He understands. Seeing, actual seeing means to understand. When you understand, then you see. Just like, I don't know in your language, but in English, if you understand something, you say, I see. Do you say that in your language also? No, in English, you say that someone may say something. I'm going to London because I have some work there. I see. In English, you say that. It doesn't mean that he's seeing you going to London. It means he understands. He's understood the point. That's why we have to see, in understanding spiritual subject, we have to see through our ears. Shruti-kshana. This is mentioned in this canto of Bhagavatam. We have to see by hearing is our eyes. Just like you see the deity. But unless you hear, this is Krishna, then you cannot understand. But how do you have to hear? You have to hear with faith. Otherwise, if you don't have faith, even if someone explains, yes, this is the deity, he is Krishna, by his desire he appears in this form. That is another symptom of his greatness, that even though he's greater than the greatest, he becomes small so that you can handle him, you can serve him in this size. If he comes as Mahavishnu, then you can't serve him, you can't accommodate him. A universal form you can't accommodate. But this size you can dress him, you can feed him. I say, how can he eat? He's a metal statue. He can eat. He's not a metal statue. He's God and he eats. And those who are devotees, they see him eating. There are many cases. Raghunandan Thakur, his father told him, because his father was going away, now you have to make the offering, feed him. So he brought the offering and said the prayers. And he's watching. He's not eating. What's wrong? What's wrong with me? You don't like me? Why I offered it to you. Why don't you eat it? And if you don't eat it, my father will be upset because he told me to eat it, eat it. And then Krishna had to eat because his devotee was forcing him. You have to eat. So anyway, he's eating by his eyes. And again he leaves it. Devotees, they can see. Madhavendra Puri, when he installed Gopal deity, he saw how Krishna was eating and again leaving everything as his remnants. So devotees, they can see because they hear with faith. The beginning of understanding is faith. If we don't have faith, then we can't begin to understand. Then people say, oh, then it's just dogmatism. You just have to believe it. But that's not blind faith. It's based upon some intelligent understanding. By our intelligence we should understand God. Not that we can understand God with our intelligence. Does that make any sense, what I just said? We should understand God with our intelligence, but we cannot understand God with our intelligence. So does it make any sense? It doesn't seem to make any sense. That means that God has given intelligence to those in the human form of life. That intelligence is meant to be used to understand God. So basic principles about the nature of God we can understand by our God-given intelligence, that there is a supreme controller, there is a supreme designer, there is a supreme friend. So these points we can understand. And as it is described in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, how the material world is going on under his direction, maya adhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharachara hitanana kunti jagat viparivartate. How everything is going under his direction, the influence of the three modes of material nature. So these things, to some extent, we can understand with our intelligence. But then, exactly why God should be blue. And in different forms, like this form, God is reddish, the boar incarnation. Or sometimes he has the white boar incarnation. Why he should appear as a boar at all? Of course, he had to pick up the earth, so it's a very suitable kind of body. But he doesn't need to, just by his wish, he can pick up the earth. The earth doesn't have to fall down at all. This is his leela, this is his pastime. He enjoys it. That's as good a reason as any. That's the best of all reasons, because the most important feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is that he is the supreme enjoyer. But with our intelligence, we cannot measure God. With our intelligence, exactly why he does what he does, then we can't describe. That's why people say, I don't believe that God takes the form of a boar. But then you're not qualified not to believe, because God is not under your jurisdiction. So the devotees, from the very beginning, they accept on faith. That is not blind faith, but that is the faith that is required to enter into the understanding of any subject. Just like in the school, if you're to study mathematics, and someone brings out some big calculation, and starts to explain it, the teacher starts to explain it, you say, well, I don't believe this. I have my own idea. 2 + 2 = 4? No, I don't believe it. 2 + 2 = 5? Why not? It's a free country, you can say whatever you like. I have a democratic right to believe that 2 + 2 = 5. Well, you have your democratic right to be a fool and an idiot. But it's impractical. It's impractical, just like if you go to the shop and you take 2 apples, and then you take another 2 apples, and then you argue with the shopkeeper, well, why aren't there 5 apples? My belief is that 2 + 2 = 5. So I took 2, I paid for them, and I took 2, and now I should have 5 apples. The person will think you're crazy, which you are. So you can democratically believe whatever you like, but it doesn't mean it's true. The absolute truth stands on its own principles. We are not the arbitrators of the absolute truth. The absolute truth is independent. So our position as tiny living beings is to understand and serve that absolute truth. We cannot control the absolute truth. This is the mistake of the mundane scholars. From the very beginning, their whole approach to knowledge is certain to be unsuccessful, because their very attitude in trying to understand is that they want to dominate and control the knowledge. The mundane scholar, you see mundane scholars, they approach Vaishnavism. I'm going to do a PhD in Vaishnavism in my university. But they cannot understand anything. Even if you'll find some scholars, they can talk to you, yes, Ramanujas, Vishishtadvaita Vad, and they'll give all the different theories within that, Sharia, Shariri Bhav, and they can explain the philosophy of Ramanujacharya or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But they have no actual understanding. It's only superficial, and it's like a parrot can also, if you train a parrot, the parrot can speak 2 + 2 = 5, 3 + 3 = 7. You can train a parrot to speak something. Or it may even be something that makes sense, like 2 + 2 = 4. But if you train the parrot to say 2 + 2 = 4, you may think, well, the parrot is a good mathematician. But he doesn't understand a word. It's just a sound to him. So in the same way, the mundane scholars, they may say, yes, well, Madhva disagreed with Ramanuja, and therefore he presented his Shuddha Dvaita philosophy in opposition to Vishishta Dvaita, but they don't understand a word of what they're talking about, even though they think they do. They cannot enter into that knowledge, because from the very beginning they take it as a subject to study. I will study Vaishnavism, and then I will write a theory and make my PhD. But this is not the way to understand that knowledge. In other words, they want to think that by amassing facts and figures, then I will understand, and I can write some, I will have it under my understanding. That's the whole point. They want to put knowledge of Krishna under them. It is something to be understood by me. But the whole approach is flawed. They want to dominate the subject. But the devotee, he understands, by, as Prabhupada said, understanding means standing under. When you become humble and think that I am, Vaishnavism isn't something for me to be studying, just like you study anthropology, mathematics, physics, history, and here's another box called Vaishnavism, and we have all these books in this box, and everything you want to know is in this box, and now you can get it on a CD. We'll make a CD. Knowledge of Vaishnavism and everything's there. You can't get knowledge like this. The knowledge of God doesn't come like that. Knowledge comes by the submissive process by which God reveals himself to the faithful devotee. The whole attitude, I will understand. You can't understand God by going to university, reading books. You can understand God by service. Atashri Krishna Namadi Navaved Grahyam Indriyai Sivan Mukhe Hi Jivado Swayameva Spuratiyada. God reveals himself to those who have a service attitude. By service and by hearing from devotees. By these two things are so much important. The service attitude, that I'm not here to dominate God and say, now I understand everything about Krishna. I've understood this theory. But the service attitude and regularly hearing from devotees. It's not that when you say you can't understand God by scholarship. It's not that devotees are not scholars. Devotees are the greatest scholars. Within our sampradaya and in other Vaishnava sampradayas also, we have such great scholars that sometimes we say about our devotees in ISKCON, oh, he's a great scholar and this and that, but compared to the great acharyas, Jiva Goswami, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, their writing is so on such a level that we can't even begin to understand it. We can't even, what they're writing is such a deep level, such a deep philosophical level, that you, even if you read it and you look up in the dictionary what all the words mean, and still you can't understand it. Because their whole intellectual level is just, you know, we were brought up on watching cartoons on television, so what are we going to understand about philosophy? It's not possible. Someone who's brought up from the very beginning in a devotional atmosphere and who's trained from a very early age, they may become great scholars by that standard. They're so, you'll see, just like in the Vedic culture, there's so many dissertations on Vedanta philosophy. But nowadays, who can understand all these points? Just on this, tattvamasi, these three words, how many hundreds of books have been written explaining exactly what each word means according to different inflection and context. But nowadays, who's going to study all these things? Even if someone wanted to, who's got the brain to understand all these things? That's why we find when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Ishwarapuri, he got initiated by him. So when you get initiated by your guru, naturally you expect to get some training in philosophy. And traditional training in philosophy is Vedanta philosophy. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked his guru, okay, teach me Vedanta. Murka tumi tomar nahik Vedanta dika. You're just a fool. You're not qualified to understand Vedanta. Krishna mantra japa sada e mantra sha. You just chant Hare Krishna. This is the essence of all Vedic knowledge. So does that mean we shouldn't study at all? No, we should study. Definitely we should study. Sometimes devotees ask, how can I become more advanced? They're very simple principles if we follow them. Rise early, chant the holy names, study Prabhupada's books. So this is one of the basic principles. Study Srila Prabhupada's books. All and everything you need to become fully Krishna conscious is in Srila Prabhupada's books, as Srila Prabhupada has told us. Everything that you need is in Srila Prabhupada's books. You don't need to read any other books. Of course, Prabhupada's disciples may make expansions expansions of the knowledge doesn't mean that there's adding anything, because everything is in Prabhupada's books. But just like, for instance, to bring some points together, to clarify some points, or just out of there, devotional ecstasy, devotees may give more commentary. But everything is there in Prabhupada's books. So by this process, Krishna can be understood. It is possible to understand God by this submissive process. Hearing and serving. Giving up the idea that I will understand God by my puffed up academic method. Jnane prayasam udapasya namanta eva jivanti sanmukaritam bhavadiya vartam sthane stita shudigatam tanuvang manovya ye prayasa jita jito apitai strimokyam. Lord Chaitanya accepted, he rejected so many processes of self-realization, but he accepted that someone who gives up the puffed up mentality that I will understand the absolute truth by my own brain power. If someone gives up that mentality, becomes humble, hears from devotees, and dedicates his life in the service of the absolute truth, then he can conquer God. These scholars, they want to conquer God by their scholarship, but they remain forever conquered. They themselves remain ever conquered by material nature. But Krishna is conquered by the love of the devotees who give up the puffed up attitude, serve, take up the service attitude, and hear from his devotees. So this is the process to understand God. And actually, if we simply accept what are the statements of Bhagavatam, then immediately we can understand. The scholars, the mundane scholars, how can we accept there's a big ball, and then they'll try to interpret in some other way. Maybe there was some tribal cult which used to worship pigs, and then later on it got, they wanted to, for social amalgamation, they wanted to amalgamate all these different tribes, so they put the story of the boar being God. They're all different tribes, and some used to worship lions, and some used to worship pigs, some used to worship fish, so they put them all together and said they're all avatars of Vishnu, and in this way for social unity. So they may make different theories. Oh, nonsense. It's amazing, actually, how many amazingly abstruse and nonsense theories they can dream up. But a devotee, he immediately accepts, yes, Krishna is God. He can do whatever he likes. If he wants, he can appear as a boar. He can come out the nose of Brahma, who has four heads. How can you believe he has four heads? Because in Bhagavatam. Why not? What do we know? We are only living on a tiny little planet. What do we know what's going on up there? So he appeared like this, and then he came out as a huge boar and roared like a great mountain, because great mountains also roar. I didn't see them, you didn't see them, but then I and you didn't see everything in the universe. So how can we say? So we accept. And when you accept it, you immediately understand it. Simply by accepting, you understand. And it becomes simple to understand. Yeah, why not? Of course. Lord Ba, he has appeared like this. Everything becomes straightforward and easy and natural. That's why even a very neophyte devotee who's just beginning, if he has faith in Krishna, he knows more about Gaudiya Vaishnavism than the big scholar, mundane scholar. How can you say that's true? The mundane scholar will explain this. Tattvavad, Vishishtadvaitavad, Dvaita Dvaita, and so many different, explaining all the details, the different categories. And here you have a new bhakta, he can't even pronounce Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. He can't even pronounce it properly. And you say, he knows more. He knows more because he's come to the proper conclusion that he accepts, yes, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And your big, big scholar will write, according to certain philosophers, Krishna is accepted as the Supreme Personality of God. It is said that Krishna is, means they haven't come to that point. And they never can come to the point of accepting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because they have dedicated their lives to being eternal agnostics and skeptics. And you can never really prove anything, they say. Well, it's proved to us that you're fool number one, but you don't accept that, because you think you're so intelligent. So they're always doubting. But those who are doubting, they can never understand. Ashadadhana purusha dharma syasya parantava aprapyamang devartante mrityu sangsara. Those who don't have any faith, then they cannot attain to Krishna. They cannot take up devotional service. But they get taken up on the wheel of birth and death again and again and again. So they're so much scholarly doubting. I doubt this and I doubt that, and we can't really prove. But this is just the scholastic, so-called scholastic pedanticism. Because when it's time for them to eat, they don't sit around making a theory. Well, is it really nourishing? Is it really good food? Should I eat it or shouldn't I? What will actually be? When they're hungry, they take some bread, they put some butter on, and they eat it. They don't go through a whole scholastic analysis. Well, is it nice or is it not? And maybe someone poisoned it. And even though I ate bread every day of my life, maybe this day when I eat it, I'll get dysentery. They don't. You could doubt in so many ways, so many things, but they don't. But when it comes to Krishna, God, oh, we doubt it. But in their practical life, they accept so many things on faith. And by accepting those things on faith, they get the benefit from it. If you sit around looking at a piece of bread, wondering, well, should I eat it or not? Then eventually you'll starve to death. But if you eat it, you get the benefit. You get nourished. So in the same way, you can go on, well, I don't know about this Krishna consciousness. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not, probably isn't. You don't get the benefit. And if you just take it up, you chant Hare Krishna, you follow this process, you get the benefit. You become ecstatic, you understand Krishna, and you go back to Godhead. So everyone has, they say we don't believe anything. We can't accept it. But they do believe, so many things they believe. They believe when they pick their foot up from the ground, when they put it, when they're walking, they put it down again, they don't believe that the earth's going to open up and swallow them. They have faith that by putting their foot on the ground, the earth will support them. So many things they believe. Well, say, well, that we can verify. But there's no verification that, okay, you walked so many days, so many times, you put your foot like this, but there's no proof that next time you lift your foot up and put it down on the ground, that you won't just fall into the ground. Where's the proof? There's no verification. But you accept certain things on reasonable faith. So it's also very reasonable to accept that there is a supreme person. It's very reasonable. It's not at all reasonable to accept that there isn't. Otherwise, how do you explain the existence of the universe? And it's very reasonable, there are more reasons, when we see that all the greatest experts in spiritual knowledge, they all accept that point. And they all demonstrate to us a process by which we can enter into the mysteries of understanding that Supreme Person. And very reasonably, it is explained how he creates, maintains, and destroys. So it's not that we're devoid of philosophy. We're not, as some people say, simply mindless robots. You have so much philosophy. We're not just accepting blindly, but we're accepting very reasonably. So actually, it is the non-devotees who are unreasonable. Sometimes these anti-cult people, they don't like these sects. You have this here in this country? Not so much. All right. In other countries they have it. So they say that, well, it's not proper. You're influencing the unformed minds of young people to accept it. But what are they doing? From the very childhood, they put them in school and influence them to believe that they are this body, and that sense gratification and acquisition of money is the goal of life. And there's so many advertisements, they're strongly influencing them to buy cigarettes and get lung cancer. But, oh, you shouldn't strongly influence. It's very bad, you're leading people in a certain way. And they're leading them to hell. And we're leading people, even if you're such a rascal, you don't accept any God. And see, these people, they're leading a very good life, they're not harming anyone, a very pure life. And that also they don't like. Why aren't they eating meat? Why aren't they taking intoxication? You'll find so many parents, their children, they're regularly taking intoxication, and they don't care. Or if they care, they don't care much. They think, well, that's normal. Everyone's kids does that. But if they join the Hare Krishna movement and stop taking intoxication, oh, very bad. And they're not even watching TV. Oh, terrible. And they become very upset and make propaganda. mainly, most probably they're upset because other people, their friends and neighbors will say to them, or their friends and neighbors say, see, his children became crazy Hare Krishnas. They're afraid that their friends and they don't care for you, but they care what my friends and neighbors and relatives will say about me. They'll say, because you couldn't bring up your child properly, probably there was some problem at home, therefore he's joined this movement. So it's all selfishness. It's all selfishness. So anyway, we have our own standard. We have to be very much fixed in this, that we accept the standard of transcendental knowledge which is coming from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. We shouldn't be misled by materialists, just like sometimes we hear really nonsense ideas from people who are supposed to be devotees. Things like, well, if we don't watch TV, then the Kamis will think we're unusual. Mm-hmm. And if we don't let our children watch TV, they'll think it's very bad. Therefore, we should have a TV, and we should let the kids watch TV and all this. And then the Kamis will think we're nice, ordinary people. Okay, the Kamis will think you're nice, ordinary people. But we don't want to be nice, ordinary people going to hell like you. If nice and ordinary means you watch TV and go to hell, then why should we be like that? Why should we allow our children to watch this violence and sex and just absolute nonsense? Tom and Jerry, Mickey Mouse. This is what you want your children to be brought up in? Yes, because that's normal. Everybody else sees that. It's normal, but it's nonsense. It makes no sense. Okay. All right, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to embarrass you. Sorry. We have a different kind of culture. One of the things is you have to learn how to sit. Now they'll say, oh, just see, they're so cruel in our Hare Krishna movement. They make you sit on the floor, no chairs. No, we have a different standard. This is civilized life. Even all this, of course in the Western countries we're accustomed to using furniture, but that it's also not necessary. Real civilization means simple. If you have to have chairs and beds and tables and all these things, and you have to get some money and you have to work to get them. So the most civilized people in Vedic culture, they're the Brahmanas. And in modern times, we think civilized means you have to have a big apartment and a BMW car and so many different electrical objects. But by Vedic standard, the most civilized person is a Brahmin who lives in a hut with the minimum. He has some water pot and a mat for lying on, minimum things. And his intelligence is used for studying Srimad Bhagavatam. So he has a different standard of culture. Sit on the floor. Eat simple food. Live very simply. You don't need a lot of money. Of course, in the modern age, we're preaching. So for preaching in this world, we also, just like I spent 20 minutes this morning sending a fax. So what am I talking about? Because this is the modern age. We're living in the modern world. We have to interact with the modern world to some extent on its grounds so that we can preach in the world. It means to organize preaching all over the world, we have to have books, which means we have to go to printing presses, we have to deal with money, we have fax machines, we have computers. But that doesn't mean that we take up the ideas and philosophy of the materialistic civilization. We deal, as stated in the nature of devotion, we deal with the material world as much as is necessary and no more. Only as much as is needed to preach Krishna consciousness. And we have our own standard of civilization. The Prabhupada gave the example, sometimes they ask, why, if you don't believe in all the, you're saying go to the land, live simply, then why are you using all these things? That example is there. Then how do you chop down a tree? With an axe. So what actually cuts the tree is the blade of the axe. But you can't cut the tree. The axe can't cut the tree unless it has a handle. And what is the handle made of? Wood. So the wood becomes the instrument to chop the wood. So all these computers, technology we're using to destroy that civilization. Destroy means it may have some usefulness, just like the printing presses, they're very good, very nice. When it's used to print Prabhupada's books, very good.
Very good. When it's used to print everything else, it's sinful. Cutting trees or putting out propaganda, which is not Krishna consciousness. But ultimately we want to take civilization, real civilization means, just like Bhaktivinoda Bhagavan action models. Real civilization means you take water in a lota and you walk one bosha minimum. Pass through and wash yourself and take action. Modern civilization means an attached bathroom. The same house we live in, you pass through. Then you wash it down with water, which is also contaminates the water, which is also such a complex of human advancement. So we have a different standard of civilization. We shouldn't be carried away by these different creations of rascals. Think that they know so many things, they're very intelligent. They're very intelligent, no doubt. But they are maya aparitagya, means their knowledge is, their intelligence is spoiled. They have good knowledge, how to build buildings, how to make computers, but how to live as human beings, they have no idea. What is civilization? They have no idea. All their machines, technology, were developed for what? Simply to develop their animalistic propensities of eating, sleeping, making, and defending. So that even despite all this advancement of science and technology, they're like animals. Man is less civilized today than at any time within their known history. So they can't live. Husband and wife, that is the normal thing in human society. But then, they don't bother getting married. Or if they bother getting married, then they again divorce. And even in a very simple principle, we can't follow that because too much lust. And then they have so many, they develop so many machines, killing machines, killed so many people, mercenaries, they develop machines, very advanced, killing so many animals. So if you examine what is the ethical standard of modern society, it's most degraded. So Krishna conscious movement is meant for actually introducing civilization based on the principle of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not the modern society, we don't believe in God. We be here now, enjoy while you can. There's no proof of God. So why should we bother? Let's just enjoy something. But you're not even enjoying yourself. What you call enjoyment, you're not happy. Our devotees, they're happy. Even if you say, we don't believe in God, we just want to be happy, even then you should join the Hare Krishna movement. Because they're much more happy than you are. You can see the faces, the inmates of their mind. Our devotees, they're much more happy. Materialistic people, they're never happy. So if your goal of life is simply to be happy, then you should also become brainwashed by us and believe in Krishna and be a devotee of Krishna, because you'll be much more happy. You're not happy, you're working hard just to get some money. Then what is your standard of happiness? Is it just some bam, ba bam, ba bam, rock and roll music, taking some intoxication, eating some dead body, blood in it? It's horrible. And devotees are happy. Come and join us, chanting, dancing. We're happy. We're happy. Maybe you know. In New York, it used to be our devotees distributing books in the airport. Dressed in kami coats, because otherwise the airport police will arrest them. So then, still the police, they have to try and arrest our devotees. So when a new policeman joins, they tell him, you have to find, if you ever see a Hare Krishna devotee, arrest him. How can you recognize him then? They have a hat, and a big bag like this. So many people in the airport have a bag and hats. And how do you recognize? Main symptom, big, happy look on their face. If you ever see anyone looking happy, arrest him immediately. It must be a Hare Krishna devotee. Because everyone else is in the airport in New York, prestigious city, Everyone wants to go to America and everything's great in America. Especially in countries like Bangladesh and India. Every day you'll see outside the American embassy at 5 o'clock in the morning, long lines of people trying to get their visa. And mostly just no. And they get stuck. Visa denied. And they'll spend money, get a new passport, go back. No. So want to go to America. And you see the people in America, miserable. You see the people they see, they watch, they're sitting in India, so they watch TV. And then what do you see on TV? You see American movie, everyone happy, nice, smiling. And all the actors, they only choose the most beautiful women, best looking men, so everyone looks very nice. And you don't watch the drama of them working on the factory, bang, bang, bang. You see them driving in a car or driving a big motorbike, Harley Davidson, having a good time. That's not the reality. You go to New York, you see, full of anxiety. Chintama parishaya. Full of anxiety. Krishna has described. Sometimes they say, well, this is something old from India. What's it got to do with modern life? Here, it's exactly described modern life. Chintam aparimayamcha. They are full of anxiety. What kind of anxiety? No limit to their anxiety. They have so much anxiety that even when they go to bed at night, they're supposed to relax. They can't sleep because they're waking up. Oh, my business. Oh, what's my wife going to run away? Oh, this, that, the other. Full of anxiety. Krishna has anxiety. And devotees? No anxiety. Vaikuntha. No anxiety. Simply happy. And how are they happy? They're selling you books, which is going to tell them how you can also become happy. Don't believe it. Don't believe in all this. We remain unhappy. We'll be happy. We are wanting to see you happy. So why should you remain miserable? The body is there very merciful. These people, they're thinking the body is a virgin. These people are so foolish. They don't even know anything about Krishna. They're passing past Krishna, and they're saying, no, we're just avoided. We're all right. Devotees, how are they wasting their life? So devotees, right, compassionately go out and give these books. And even sometimes the devotees are mistreated, people call their name or something, beat them because nothing in America is heavy books. America, how did that country grow up? On the gun. In the Wild West, in the war of the gun. So it's part of American life. If you don't like anything, if you don't like, just punch the guy in the face. It happens so many times during the war. They're distributing books. All of a sudden, they'll get up and again go on the street. Because they know this person, he is unfortunate. I'm not unfortunate. I got punched in the face. That's actually mercy for me. They get the opportunity to serve Krishna difficult. So there may be some problems, some pain, and this and that. But basically, my position is very good. I'm serving Krishna by doing this preaching and distributing books. I come back to God. I have no problem. He has a problem because he doesn't like spreading Krishna consciousness. Therefore, very merciful, the devotee goes on. Even though he's tortured, blaspheming, he knows these people, they are suffering, they are sick. When they're in the counties, criticize that woman, or preaching too strongly, how can you believe in this? We should just know, everything they're saying is just like a continuous flow of stool coming out of their mouth. No, it's just all garbage. If they say anything against our Krishna conscious woman, we should know. We don't have to adjust ourselves to them. They are diseased people. They need reforming. They need to read Prabhupada's books. Now, of course, they're diseased people. You have to deal with them. So they're mentally disturbed. Everyone needs material, a crazy person. They are mentally disturbed. They need a certain kind of treatment. They have to be dealt with very carefully because they're crazy. But we should understand they are crazy. They need treatment. The treatment is Hare Krishna mantra, that is the medicine, Dayak is Krishna Prasadam. And the medical books, Srila Prabhupada. This is the process, gradual treatment, by which they can become sane. Janataga, Vitlava. Now they're too much simple, therefore they can't understand. We tell them about Krishna, there's part and parcel of Krishna, and everything they're doing is only because Krishna gives them the ability to do it. They're inseparable from Krishna. And they say, oh, I don't believe. So much insane. I don't believe, I don't want to believe. Very much diseased. Not being Krishna conscious is a very diseased condition. Therefore the devotee is very merciful. Go on with their service, trying to bring them to Krishna consciousness. And they're never disturbed by the rantings of these mad people who think that God cannot be involved, cannot be a Maya, cannot be a Kapi. Because it's not a Krishna. He is Krishna. I didn't say there's no Krishna. Prabhupada's in Krishna. Bhogamanga Thakur's in Krishna. Vishnu Sons in all the Acharyas are in Krishna. And we're also seeing Krishna. Although it's seeing me, it's your experience in Krishna. Otherwise, when we're chanting and dancing, what is that pleasure? So many people are singing and dancing. They were singing and dancing all night, but then drunk. Horrible song. But we don't have to get drunk to sing and dance. Nor are we any interest in it. Because we get a completely different kind of mental pleasure by singing and dancing in the name of Krishna. Anyone who's ever been in this Krishna conscious moment has definitely experienced transcendental ecstasy. Even if it's only a tiny drop from a great ocean of nectar. Everyone's experienced, everyone who's come to Krishna, they've experienced it sometime, like when they've studied the books, or seen Jagannath and Arathi Akshakarnash, Jagannath Swami, and the Pantagami, Bhagavata, and the Renwell, Jagannath Arathi Akshakarnash, this is a good question. When will he mercifully come here? Where's Arathi Akshakarnash? She's doing something. So anyway, the point is that devotees, every devotee has experienced the ecstasy and gave themselves to Krishna at any point. We've experienced it sometimes, that ecstasy. And you can never forget that, because there's nothing in the material world to slightly compare with them. Whatever there is, what is this happiness in the material world? Lying on the beach, having sex, eating lobsters. What they think of happiness, it's just empty. There's nothing there. That's why anyone who's taken to Krishna consciousness can never forget that. It's actually what these anti-cult people say is true. We're spoiling people's lives. We're spoiling their lives. They can never be a happy. Once anyone's come to Krishna consciousness, they can never be a happy materialist. It's not possible. Even if they decide, okay, I had enough Krishna consciousness for this lifetime. Now I'm going to enjoy myself. They can never enjoy themselves. Their whole material life is spoiled. Even if they get enough money and all that. But generally, if someone's not Christian, a devotee who tries to not be Krishna conscious and be rich and all these things, Krishna just smashes him even more than the karmas. Because he doesn't allow it. If a devotee tries to be happy in this material world, Krishna is so kind, he just completely smashes them. So they'll become more and more miserable. And that's actually the problem, because they know they've had a highest factor of pleasure. So how are they going to take pleasure in lying on the beach, watching TV? There's nothing there. The devotee knows it. He has not only philosophical, but he's had a higher experience. Devotees are very special people. Anyone who takes to Krishna consciousness, very special person. But some realization of Krishna. It's not a small thing. Even if we see a nearby devotee, they are just it's a very special person. He's come to a position which the yogis and jnanis and karmis, they couldn't come to in millions of lifetimes. In fact, there's all the putting on tilak, Vishnu tilak. To come to this point, you have to go through millions and millions of lifetimes. What an elevated person. How fortunate. Look after him. Give him some prasad. Make sure he doesn't go out the door. Go back to being like not Bhakta Bozo, but simply Bozo. Just keep him in Krishna consciousness. Very special. Anyone who comes to Krishna consciousness. You may think, well, there are so many people coming. Every devotee. It's very, very special. Because they've accepted Krishna. Even we may think, well, now we have to get university degrees and people will respect us. And then we think, oh, who's got a university degree? He is very important. And he is Bhakta so-and-so. All he can do is clean the pots. He doesn't know that he has any university degree. He's just useful. But he's cleaning the pots for Krishna. He's millions and millions of times better than any PhD who won't even lift one little finger in Krishna. This is the standard. Bodhi is glorious. Jiva Ji Shri Bhara Abhakta Hinacha. This is Lord Chaitanya's conclusion. Who is a devotee? He is glorious. And as for the non devotees, they are all rascals, rejected. This is Lord Chaitanya's conclusion. Alright, Hare Krishna. I can't understand this here, Rex Griffin, I'm supposed to finish at 8:30. Sorry. Alright, any question? We're allowed to take some questions? Okay. Any question? One question. Please translate.
What is the position of eternal condition? Souls and like this position of beings.
The eternal condition of the soul is to serve Krishna in the spiritual world. When we forget Krishna and come to this material world, then we become conditioned eternally. And we have to suffer repeated birth and death within different species of life. Beginning devotee means he's beginning on the path by which he gets free from birth and death and goes back to Krishna. Is anything more specific? Is there any other question?
So which way we can preach to scientific person?
Specialized scientific preaching should be left to devotees who are qualified in mundane science and who are trained in preaching to mundane scientists. That means if you're really going to get in deeply into theories and all this. But as far as preaching to scientifically minded people, who are just laymen, who we may meet on the street, this and that, well, the best preaching for everybody is to give them God's thoughts. Apart from that, we can preach just like there's so much knowledge in Prabhupada's books. You read the books and then you'll get enough knowledge to preach to everybody. You hear the plan, just like some of the points I was making. Scientifically minded person may say that the universe came into being by chance. So to give the example, can you imagine even a light bulb coming into existence by chance? So by reading Prabhupada's books and hearing the classes, you can learn how to preach to everybody. As there may be some fields of specialized preaching, like preaching to Indologists, professional philosophers, scientists. But that's just for a few devotees who are trained in that, who will go very deeply into the subject. It's not necessary for every devotee.
There's something that
it wasn't Prabhupada's. Prabhupada was very pleased with it. In fact, it first came out in German. And it was less edited than the English edition. It Because if you read the original conversation, I mean, you might think light comes from earth, it's heavy. But if you read the original conversations, it's actually been edited quite a lot, so it's not nearly as heavy as it was originally. So the original version came out in German, and it was edited much less. Leben kommt von Leben. And now you're used to see if you're waiting, when are we going to get this in English? And that very, that conversation at the end, Anzadutta speaking with Dr. Kapoor, or correspondent comments, very pleasant. So, people may have their opinion that it's too heavy, but I find a problem. That is the safe position. We may think, well, you know, this isn't right, that isn't right, we should. We'll be in the safe position if we accept the Paramahansa Prabhupada. Even if it appears to be against what appears to be rationally correct, just like even what to speak of distributing light comes from light, it would seem that there are better ways to preach Krishna consciousness than distributing books. It would seem that, for instance, if we concentrated on television productions, and that if we just go and meet people and speak with them, many times we might think that, well, distributing books, we put so much effort into it, what actually comes out of it. But Prabhupada had said, knowing for certain that there is no better way of preaching than to distribute my books. And he said, in this matter, I follow my Guru Maharaj blindly. So if you want to question that, why not question the book distribution? Prabhupada said, knowing for certain, there is no better way of preaching than distributing my books. Therefore we follow them. And actually that's a fact. Almost all the devotees, they come from reading Srila Prabhupada's books. And the gradual effect that they have on society, the people in the Western world, they're accepting reincarnation, they're accepting Krishna as the Supreme Mother. The effect is there. You may not see it as quickly. If we had a TV program, everyone says, oh, how nice. But Prabhupada explained that kind of impression comes and goes. When you read the book, that makes a very solid impression. So it's very dangerous to question what Prabhupada said. If Prabhupada approved it, and we don't approve it, then we're in a very dangerous position. Then of course you may say, well, that was at that time, and now it's 20 years later. Has the world changed that much? That means we have to change our whole preaching. Then you change everything. Well, 20 years ago we used to have Mangalarti and Fourth Birthday, now we shall have it 4:30 in the afternoon. Times have changed. More people could come. You know, maybe we could stay up all night and then we could just get up at 12 o'clock at midday. Probably more people would join our movement if we didn't get up so early in the morning. That would be good for preaching, wouldn't it? If we tell everyone, you can get up at 9 o'clock in the morning, and you don't have to chant 16 rounds, and you don't have to follow 4 regulated principles, and you can do whatever you like, and call yourself a member of ISKCON and get another stand by the issue, we could probably have millions of followers. It's not what Prabhupada told us. We have to understand, we have to follow Prabhupada. That will be our success. Strength comes from following the ground. It may seem by our judgment that there are better ways to do things, but there aren't, because we are conditioned souls. Acharyas are not, especially Prabhupada is the founder of Acharyas movement. Means we have to follow what he says. Guru in this movement means he follows Prabhupada. And if they don't follow Prabhupada, then they're not guru. And we've seen they have no cases. Guru Api, even though they're guru, Guru Api Avalipdas, he has one way from the position. Because he didn't strictly follow the Prabhupada. That's the strength is coming. Too heavy, some people get upset. Let them be upset. And we'll argue with them. We'll discuss with them. We're not afraid to discuss our philosophy. If we speak our philosophy, you can know it for certain that some people are going to get upset. Because our philosophy goes against everything that materialistic people stand for. So we may think, well, if we want people to like us, then we should kind of hide away our philosophy, most of it. Just speak a little bit about vegetarianism. That's about it. Become a pigeon. Vegetarian. But if we're going to actually present what is there in Bhagavad Gita, Namam Dushkriti Om Mool, what does Krishna say about those who are not devotees? Namam Dushkriti Om Mool Ha, Tatyante Narayana Namaha, Maya Parita Jnana Asuram Bhagavan Ashrita. Those who are not surrendered to me, Krishna says, they're all rascals. The word Dushkriti means rascal. And they're in four categories. Mool Ha means fool, Radha means lowest among mankind. Maya Aparita Gyan means someone who thinks they're very intelligent, but their real intelligence has been stolen by man. Asura and Bhagavan Ashrita means out and out demon. These are the words of Krishna. So, we're not going to edit them. Well, I think Bhagavad Gita is too heavy. I think we should just edit it and leave out things like this, and then it's better for preaching. If you want to edit Prabhupada's books so they're not so heavy, well, you have to cut most of the books out. Because it's all heavy. And then you can distribute more books, because you can have a whole Srimad Bhagavatam just like this. And you can say, we distributed so many Srimad Bhagavatams. Krishna is smiling. Krishna is smiling. Maybe we shouldn't put Krishna, because it's an Indian name and people can't relate to it so much. So we should just put God. But then a lot of people don't really believe in God, so we could say it. Yes, you know, we could sell a lot of books. You won't sell any books. If you adjust the philosophy, you won't sell any books, because you don't get any power or inspiration from the acharyas. If you don't have faith in Krishna and in Prabhupada, then you won't be able to preach anywhere. You can say, well, we're preaching. But what is your preaching? Simply making friends, shaking hands with people. You're very nice. We like the Hare Krishna movement because you don't tell us to give up meat or fish or eggs or surrender to Krishna. It's very nice. You just become like a kami and they'll like you. Superficial. But if you preach to someone and tell you're a rascal, you have to surrender to Krishna. And they preach to them, they change their life. Then they'll actually appreciate. But anyway, our goal is not to sit in the peaceful blindness. Our goal is to save people from the illusion of rejecting Krishna. And that's a heavy thing. People are, have you ever been to a mental hospital? See how it's a heavy place. Deeply in the mode of ignorance. Very difficult to deal with. So everyone in this material world is like that. They seem to be very sane and nice, alive. You just touch them. Now you have to surrender to Krishna. Give up all this nonsense. And you see all your polite, well-mannered, cordial people now upset me. Because they're all crazy. Indeed. It's not just, you just don't go to the manual hospital and just shake hands with people and think they're all going to become sane. It requires a certain treatment. That treatment has to be given by the doctor. The doctor knows how to treat. So the doctor is... That's what Hinduism means. It's just, everything's nice, do it. Doctor, not doctor, what, whatever you believe, everything is nice. Actually, I hate that. I that book, My Memories of Prabhupada, the second part of the book, is an essay with 135 quotes. There's 130 from Prabhupada, 4 from Bhagavad Gita, so there's 1 from Bhagavad Gita, on why we have to preach strongly. Because there's so much within our movement. Just be nice to people, smile at them. And that's not preaching. Preaching means to tell you're going to hell, sir. Quick, you're going to die in a few days. Chant Hare Krishna. And we'll just be nice to them. You be nice to them and smile, and they won't take you seriously at all. If they are oppressing us and saying Hare Krishna movement is very bad, then we can know there's something going on good. If we're sticking to our principles and people don't like us and they're complaining, then we can know that actually we're preaching. Because preaching means the demons must become disturbed. If people are becoming Krishna conscious, and if we're presenting the philosophy, surrender to Krishna, and people are taking notice of it, and our preaching is having effect, and people are coming to Krishna consciousness, then definitely demons will become disturbed, and that is one sign of success. That's also quoted in my book, The Dhamma. He quoted that more than once. So we don't deliberately agitate demoniac people, but at the same time, we don't just we don't deal with them superficially. Everyone in this material world is deeply dealing superficially. We give them the real thing. And if they become disturbed, that's their problem, because they're insane. But many people will appreciate it also. We just speak I've met people who, by reading this Light Comes from Light, they thought, oh, this is fantastic. They've become devotees by reading it. So what if 99 rascals don't like, most people, anyway, they won't be against it. Those who are more demonic, they'll be against it. But some people, it will change their lives. They'll become devotees. They can see. Yes, that's true. All these ideas that we learn in school, it's all cheating and nonsense. I met a scientist from some tribe in India, and I preached him all these things. And at the end, when he got out, he said, I'm very grateful, because actually I was brought up, he's from Orissa, I was brought up as a devotee of Jagannath. But then I studied science, and then I couldn't relate the two things, and therefore my devotion got spoiled. But now I understand all these things you told me. So I'm very grateful. There are many cases like that. One devotee from South India, he was living in our temple in Baroda, just north of here. So he told me he went back to the town where he studied. He went to the college, he was doing some preaching. So the professor, who used to be his physics professor, he came in, he saw him preaching to the students. And they started discussing, and they got in a big fight and an argument. And so anyway, that devotee gave him his book, Light Comes from Light. And he was really upset. He didn't like it at all. Anyway, that devotee didn't go back to that town for a few years. He went back there again when they had Rath Yatra. And there in that parade, he saw that professor chanting Hare Krishna. And he said, thank you very much. It's only my false ego. I couldn't listen to you. I read that book. I understood that everything you said is true. It's changed my life. Thank you very much. So, this is the truth. And those who are honest will accept it. Those who are dishonest will be ready to argue. Because we are very solid to understand. You don't like this book? Why not? What is your problem? What in this book is not true? We are calling the rascals, we're calling the scientists rascals. Yes, we're calling them rascals. Well, that's not it. It is proper. Because if they say that they're scientists, and they say that light comes from light, then they should be able to demonstrate it. But they're not. Therefore, they're rascals. We're not indiscriminately calling them rascals. We're very reasonably calling them rascals. We'll preach. That's when the fun begins. If it's just shaking hands, how are you? It's horrible. All our acharyas preach strongly. See, Ramanujacharya was preaching so strongly that the king of that area wanted to kill him. He didn't stop. Of course, he left at that time. But he didn't stop his preaching. Jesus Christ was preaching. He was preaching strongly against these Philistines and false priests. He was preaching against animals sacrificed in the temple. He wanted to kill them. He didn't stop preaching. Actually, there's one quote in that book I gave, that because Jesus was crucified, his Christianity spread so much. If he hadn't been crucified, it wouldn't have spread so much. Because he was persecuted, therefore his teachings were able to spread more. If there's not some opposition, that means people don't take us very seriously. But if there's opposition and we face that opposition and we take all difficulties, then people will notice that we stick to our principles. People see that we simply compromise with everybody else, no one will take us seriously. But if they see we have principles, we believe in them, we're prepared to argue on that, and we live by them, then people will notice that this happy look, it's not just some brainwashed thing, which they say, it's not just some intoxication. We have something very solid we do. Don't be afraid to preach strong. Some discrimination should be there also, that's a fact. It's not that, just like if you get invited to speak, it didn't happen yet, I guess, but if on the national day, Croatia, and you're called to speak in the presence of the Prime Minister, Hare Krishna movement's message to Croatia, and you say the Prime Minister is a demon, which is true, Oh, sorry, I didn't mean that. Turn off the tape recorder. No, it can be a problem. Recently in Poland, in the class, I don't know, the focus of the thing, and someone was there from that tape recorder. So anyway, if you invited our devotees to speak, then we wouldn't. Anyway, some discrimination should be there also. But just in the name of discrimination means we should be somewhat expert how to present these things. But preaching means that we have to present what we have to say. And it's not that other people, are presenting. You see the whole world, there are so many people presenting ideas. Is it that everybody agrees with everybody else? Opposition is always there. Politicians are fighting each other, calling each other names. That's going on in the world. It's a one under progression. That one story I heard after I made that book, I put it in the next edition. One time Giriraj Maharaj was going into Prabhupada's room and one man came running out, very angry. So Giriraj Maharaj went to Prabhupada's room, Prabhupada was sitting with his head on the table. As he looked up and he said, "Why am I so strong?" Then his mood changed, anger turned and said, I must be strong. Distribute by consumer. I get more enthused distributing this book. I'm very happy to distribute this book. I'm buying books and I like to distribute it. Did you see this book, Hare Krishna Challenge?
Yes.
Yeah, I made that book. Because I wanted something for the colleges in India. Because they're just so complacent. Yeah. Everything's okay. Give them this. This is Srila Prabhupada Raja, something strong. Great book. Good, heavy doses. That's one side. Also we have chanting, festivals, distribute prasad. Fighting is there also. Happy, blissful, joyful, that we have seen. We have our books also. And it's not also every time we meet people that we have to fight with them. Let the books, they're strong. Let me do that. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Jai
Prabhupada Maharaj ki jai. Prabhupada Maharaj ki jai. Om Bhimana.